Thank you, and good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending. I will start with going through our businesses, and Andrew Broomhead, our CFO, will go through the financial section. Turning to slide number two. Pacific Basin made a net loss of $158 million in 2012. The largest explanation for this loss was a $199 million mid-year write-off and a $12 million operating loss for our RoRo business. We have since agreed the forward sale of our RoRo fleet, and we now consider PB RoRo a discontinued operation. While 2012 started with very weak dry cargo rates, as is the case again in early 2013, our second half 2012 performance was fairly strong. Excluding impairments, we generated an underlying profit of $48 million for the full year and an operating cash flow of $149 million. This positive underlying result and healthy cash flow represent a respectable performance in what was the weakest dry bulk market since 1987. Our dry bulk business significantly outperformed the weak market and generated a net profit for the year, which is a rare thing among dry bulk shipping companies these days, and a powerful proof of how strong our business model is. We also benefited from the continued growth of our towage business, which delivered a strong contribution and solid returns. We increased our total cash and deposits to $753 million, which more than covers our $236 million commitments in respect of 16 vessels currently contracted to deliver into our dry cargo fleet in primarily 2013, and still leave substantial remaining buying power on our balance sheet. As vessel prices are back to pre-boom levels, we have returned to the acquisitions market, and since September 2012, we have purchased 8 dry bulk vessels, including 7 second-hand ships and 1 newbuilding resale. In view of the group's positive operating cash flow, and despite the loss-making net result for 2012, the board has recommended a final dividend of 5 Hong Kong cents per share. Turning to slide 3. Our dry bulk performance. Our dry bulk division made a net profit of $39 million and an operating cash flow of $114 million. Our second half performance recovered from a weak first half due to stronger TCE earnings following a better market in Q2 and Q3 and due to a reduction in the cost of our shorted in-fleet. Our handysize business made a contribution of $62 million, and our reliance on relatively expensive medium-term shorted ships in the depressed market resulted in a modest but positive Handymax contribution of $7 million. Our Handysize and Handymax daily earnings reduced 23 and 22% year-on-year, leading to a squeeze in our operating margin. However, they still outperformed their corresponding markets by 44 and 31% respectively, which again demonstrates the value of our industrial and customer-focused business model and the cargo book this brings. The protracted dry bulk market weakness further impacted ship values over 2012, as we had anticipated. After a one-year pause, we returned to the ship acquisitions market in September, at which time vessel prices had softened about 30% since the beginning of the year. Since September, we have committed to purchase 8 vessels with an average price of $15.2 million and an average age of about 6.5 years. They include 6 second-hand handy-sized vessels, 1 handy-sized newbuilding resale, and 1 second-hand Handymax vessel. We currently have 16 owned and 5 chartered ships contracted to join our dry bulk fleet in 2013 to 2015. Slide 4. We operated an average of 155 dry bulk ships in 2012, up from 130 in 2011. Growth was primarily driven by operating more short-term chartered and index-linked chartered ships and profitably combining tonnage and cargo opportunities in the marketplace to add value to operating our core fleet. As at 25th February 2013, we had covered 55% of our close to 30,000 handy-sized revenue days in 2013 at 9,300 per day. This is over 2,000 less than our cover rate of a year ago due to the completion of cargo contracts secured at higher rates in a stronger market. We had also covered 80% of our close to 9,000 Handymax revenue days in 2013 at 10.6 per day. As always, we manage very carefully our forward cargo book, particularly in volatile market conditions and as we expand our fleet. Slide 5. After an initial sharp decline in freight rates in early 2012, the dry bulk market remained weak throughout the year. Healthy demand was undermined by the oversupply of mainly larger ships generated by excessive newbuilding deliveries of recent years. In what was the weakest dry bulk market in 26 years, Handysize and Handymax spot rates averaged a little under 7,300 and 9,000 per day net respectively, both down roughly 30% year on year. The much larger, more expensive, and less versatile Capesize and Panamax ships generated substantially the same average earnings as Handysize ships and less than Handymaxes, once again demonstrating the lower volatility and better fundamentals in the market for our smaller vessels. Freight market weakness has translated into lower secondhand and newbuilding ship prices. Benchmark five-year-old Handysize ship values are currently estimated by Clarksons to be about $17 million, down from $19.5 million a year ago. 2013 has got off to a seasonally weak start, with market spot rates below average rates for the second half of 2012. We expect to see a similar pattern in the market this year as in 2012, and for the market to remain weak overall. We will revert to dry bulk demand later, so we're skipping over slide 6 and turning to slide 7. The global fleet of 25 to 40,000 ton handysize ships in which we specialize expanded by 3% net in 2012. By contrast, the overall dry bulk fleet expanded by 10%. This was driven by the delivery of 98 million tons of new capacity, which was only partly offset by the scrapping of a record 34 million tons of existing capacity. The handysize segment continues to benefit from a significantly lower rate of deliveries, a high volume of scrapping, and overall a more favorable fleet age profile, as 22% of the global handysize fleet is over 25 years old. A rapid influx of new ship deliveries gave way to markedly reduced deliveries in the fourth quarter, representing the first sign of slowing since the start of 2010. We are confident that the peak year for new ship deliveries is now past. Slide 8. The very weak market and severe funding shortage led to a 55% drop in new ship ordering activity in 2012. Combined with a heavy influx of new ships, this has resulted in a significant reduction in dry bulk capacity on order. The handysize order book has reduced from 23% a year ago to 17% as at 1st February, which looks favorable considering 22% of the handysize fleet is over 25 years old. The order book for dry bulk vessels overall has fallen more dramatically, from over 30% a year ago to 19%. Newbuilding prices remain under pressure, and according to Clarksons, have reduced 7% over the past 12 months to $21 million for a handysize ship as shipyards compete and struggle to secure new contracts. Slide 9. We expect the dry bulk market weakness of 2012 to continue through 2013. Demand grew by 7% in 2012, and we anticipate similarly healthy demand growth in 2013. But it will take some time for the market to absorb the oversupply of mainly larger ships generated by the large volume of newbuilding deliveries of recent years. Healthier fundamentals should limit further downside in the handysize market. Relatively restrained ordering of newbuildings has resulted in better balance in this market segment, which is expected to see newbuilding deliveries substantially offset by scrapping in 2013. Conditions overall are likely to remain challenging, thereby generating further vessel and fleet acquisition opportunities for ship owners with available cash. Our two key strategic objectives for dry bulk in 2013 are: one, to continue to purchase Handysize and Handymax ships at attractive prices, thereby growing further our fleet of high-quality owned ships, and two, to expand our dry bulk customer and cargo portfolio in tandem with our core fleet expansion. We remain optimistic about the longer term. We expect high levels of ship scrapping and limited new ship ordering to moderate dry bulk ship supply expansion, while demand remains relatively robust as emerging economies continue to industrialize and grow. Turning to slide 10 and our PB Towage business unit. Our towage division generated a net profit of $38 million and an operating cash flow of $52 million, reflecting our increasingly competitive position in the active offshore support and harbor towage markets in Australasia. The offshore energy infrastructure sector was again the main growth driver for PB Towage in 2012. We increased our involvement in the West Australian and Queensland offshore gas sectors, driving a 13% increase in the average number of towage vessels we operated during the year. And our harbor towage business also showed improved results on an 11% increase in tug jobs due to market growth and our expanded market share. Utilization of our tug fleet increased to 97%, barge utilization increased to 76%, and the return on our towage net assets was a strong 17%. Slide 11. We believe PB Towage has the capacity to expand, and we consider ourselves well positioned competitively to participate in continued growth in offshore energy projects and bulk port towage activity in Australia and internationally. These opportunities for growth represent the main focus of our towage operations in 2013. Our most recent initiative is to commence harbour towage operations in the port of Newcastle in the middle of this year, and we're also working with a further investment within our offshore sea tow business. Slide 12, PB RoRo. I will not spend much time on this, but update that five of the six RoRos have now delivered to Grimaldi on bareboat charters, and the sixth is due to enter in March 2014 after expiry of the vessel's current employment in the Mediterranean. The buyers have an obligation to purchase at least one vessel every 6 months, starting June 2013 and ending December 2015. As a result of this transaction, our exposure to the RoRo spot charter market has been eliminated, and our RoRo business is discontinued. I will now pass you over to Andrew Broomhead, our CFO, who will present the financial section. Andrew.
Thank you very much, Matt. I will turn straight to slide number 16, the balance sheet, where you will see that the dry bulk towage represents about 84% and 16% of our vessel book value. Our 44 delivered Handysize vessels had an average age of 8.4 years and an average book value of $16.6 million. The column discontinued RoRo includes the asset value of four RoRo vessels. As of their bareboat charter commencement date, they will be categorized as trade receivables under the Treasury column, which is where the value of the other two RoRo vessels is shown. At the end of December, we had cash and deposits of $753 million, a net borrowing position of $178 million, giving net gearing of 14%. Slide 17. This slide shows our annual borrowing and capex payment obligations. The seven Handysize and one Handymax vessel purchased in the last 6 months have increased our capital commitments, which mainly arise in the year of 2013. the combined $931 million of borrowing maturities are managed so as to remain comfortably spread over the coming 6+ years and will be met from existing cash resources, future operating cash flows, and new borrowing facilities. Slide 18. Group generated operating cash flows of $149 million for the year, coupled with existing cash and $163 million from increased borrowings. This funded vessel payments of $195 million, which included two Handysize, two Handymax, and one RoRo vessel all delivered during the year, and installments for another 11 dry bulk vessels, leaving PB with cash of $753 million at the year end. We'll now hand back to Mats for the summary.
Thank you, Andrew. So 2012 was an important year in Pacific Basin's evolution towards becoming a more focused company. During the year, we secured our future exit from the RoRo sector. We disposed of our minority interest in a cargo terminal in Nanjing. We canceled our undrawn commitment to a clean technology fund. And we sold our marine surveying company, Pac Marine Services. Going forward, we will continue to seek divestment opportunities for our few remaining non-core activities. I'm very happy with the strategy of distilling our activities down to what we do best. It now allows us to direct substantially all our attention and resources towards our core dry bulk and towage businesses. Our dry bulk business model and strategy are very focused. That is to say, customer focused, cargo-focused, and segment-focused. The Handysize segment continues to demonstrate resilience in these challenging times, and our business continues to outperform our market indexes, benefiting from the value of an effective business model and the right people and tools to realize economies of scale. All things considered, Pacific Basin's core focus on the Handysize and Handymax dry bulk business is absolutely where we need to be, and is therefore central to our investment plan. Dry bulk market conditions overall are likely to remain challenging in 2013, which should generate further vessel acquisition opportunities. And I repeat, as we have started to do since September last year, we are strategically focused on 1, buying more Handysize and Handymax ships at attractive prices, and 2, expanding our dry bulk customer and cargo portfolio in tandem with our core fleet expansion. PB Towage has established itself as a safe and quality conscious operator with a strong customer base in both the offshore project and harbor towage sectors. We consider PB Towage to be well positioned to compete for opportunities in these sectors as the market develops further in Australia and internationally. Our recent decision to enter the port of Newcastle demonstrates our belief in this business and in the PB Towage team. In closing, we are working very hard to position the company to emerge from the weak dry bulk market larger and more competitive, always delivering a world-class service to our customers while building shareholder value over the long term. We now invite questions.
Thank you. And now the question and answer section will now begin. If anyone wishes to ask questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. The first question is from Rudolf of Clay Management. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I think the operator got my name wrong, so sorry for the pause. Yeah, a couple of questions. Basically, you were talking about scrapping. You talked about it on page 9. Now, can you please put some color on it and sort of give an indication of how you see dry bulk scrapping developing over the next year or two. I mean, they continue to high levels of dry bulk scrapping.
Yeah,
quantitatively, how much do you think that would be? Second, I mean, you have a clear strategy of accumulating ships while prices are at decent levels. What is your competition doing, as far as you know, in that regard? And finally, if there is a significant Chinese slowdown, can you try and quantify the risks to your business? Thank you.
All right. Thank you for those questions. First question about scrapping. In our Handysize segment in particular, we foresee continued high scrapping. You will find at the bottom right-hand corner of that slide a 9% figure on Handysize. That is the annual rate of scrapping, right? So that's the recent scrapping rate divided by the world fleet. So currently about 9% every year of the fleet is disappearing by way of scrapping. We foresee that remaining around that level. You will also see that 22% of the fleet is over 25 years old, and that's the reason for why we believe that that scrapping will remain at a relatively high level for the Handysize segment. The other reason is that we expect the weak rates to continue for 2013. Now, I'll draw your attention to the order book for Handysize, which for the rest of this year is about 11.5%, as you see on the top left side of that slide. But, you know, you have something called slippage or shortfall, and that is people pushing out the deliveries and the yards pushing out the deliveries. It's been around 30% in recent years, 26% or 28% actually for last year. So if you take 28% off the 11-12% of deliveries, you'll get down to maybe 8-9% of new ships delivering. And you can do the math and come to the conclusion that, you know, very limited, if any, fleet growth in our segment. And with 7% demand growth, you know, things should get better. But we are also influenced by the larger segments, and there the fundamentals are not as good. It's getting better, but it looks much better on Handysize than in the larger segments. So that's on scrapping. Your second question about buying ships and what's the competition like for that?
Yep.
You know, there are other buyers out there, but as you know, funding is limited, so there's not that many companies that are positioned to buy. A lot of our deals, you know, are Japanese deals. Some of them are private, and they don't come to the open market. You know, one of the most valuable things with Pacific Basin is our Japanese connections, our Japanese relationships. Two-thirds of our ships overall have come from Japan. We have an office there. We have outstanding relationships with the yards and the trading houses and the Japanese owners. Japan is the largest nationality owner of Handysize ships. So, you know, that's we were able to pick up ships maybe easier than the average buyer.
Okay. Sorry, before you go on to China, just a quick question on your ships. In your balance sheet, according to, well, page 16, you talked about the book value as being, looks like, $1.06 billion. Can you give an indication about the true valuation, the underlying valuation of your fleet versus the book value figure?
We don't do that, but again, I mean, you could work it out if you take our fleet list and
the clause. 6 million, 8.5 years old.
Sorry, could you repeat that point?
That's the average book value, you say. But
yeah. I mean, we're looking at the, you know, if you're looking at what Clarkson's indicated values are for a five-year-old vessel at the moment, they're talking about 17 million, which is fractionally up from where it was at the beginning of this year. So, you know, to go from 5 years through to 8 years, you would be adding maybe about, taking off about $3 million, $2.5 to $3 million from that. So the fair market values, yes, have come down quite clearly. And that's why we are very actively looking to expand our fleet through further acquisitions at the current time.
Okay. So what you're saying is from the sort of underlying figure that you have in your in that slide. So vessels at one total vessels end of 2012 at 1.3 billion. Basically, there's not much of a difference between the true. Supposing you liquidated your entire fleet, you would basically get 1.3 billion in return, right?
Again, we won't comment on that. Again, there is a shortfall between book value and market value, but we have never quantified that. And again, you if you go through that one more time, maybe offline with Andrew, we do provide our average book value and the average age, right? And what Andrew did for you was that he compared that with the Clarkson and so on, but it's kind of a little bit of an exercise, and take that with Andrew offline, I would suggest.
One thing I would comment is that you may see with some other shipping companies a question of impairments on their balance sheet at the year end. So if that's part of your concern, clearly, you know, as at every accounting reporting date, we have to go through an impairment assessment. And you know, whilst market values, you know, if they're below the book value, that is an indication of an impairment. The accounting standards for the testing of the impairment do look at the net present value of the expected cash flows from those vessels. And clearly, we have just completed the audit, and you know, we've gone through that exercise, and there is no impairment indicator in our case, which it comes down to the business model that we're operating.
Okay, thank you. All right, so on China.
So on China, what's the risk for on us on a Chinese slowdown? We're probably less dependent on China than the average dry bulk company, and the reason is that we have the smaller ships and we carry a lot of agriculture products as opposed to the big dominance on iron ore and coal that the larger vessels rely on and the imports to China. You know, it's kind of impossible to quantify, you know, the risk of a Chinese slowdown. But I would say we are less dependent on it than the average dry bulk company. We are balanced today between the Atlantic and the Pacific. And we have a very diversified both cargo portfolio and customer portfolio. That's not to mean that China is not important for us. But again, we are very diversified, and you have some details in the appendixes on our cargo mix, etc.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from Raymond Yap of CIMB. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for the conference call. Matt, you actually answered my question before I even asked it. I wanted to ask you about what I heard from some ship owners out there saying that a lot of the dry bulk vessels that are available in the second-hand market are actually not very well maintained because the owners have been cash-strapped by the five-year downturn. And also a lot of the ships having been constructed by the Chinese yards are of very poor quality, and that's the reason why second-hand ships are very cheap. I'm supposing here that the Japanese vessels are different from that. They're much better quality and much better maintained. Would I be correct to say that?
Certainly in the case of the ships that we have bought, that is a correct statement. All the 8 ships that we have bought are Japanese built. You know, it's not true for every segment, but in Handysize, yes, the Japanese yards, in our view, build the best designs that have the best speed and consumption figures, and we are very particular about the ships that we buy. If not, we would have bought even more, right? But it's not necessarily untrue what you hear from other owners, that a lot of the ships that are available in the open market are not necessarily the best quality. But again, all the ships we have bought are Japanese-built, perfect for our operations. 7 of them are logs fitted, fitting straight into our cargo contract business.
Okay. How about the eco ships that are being marketed right now by by shipyards? Would those have a better fuel consumption metric than the ships that you have just recently purchased?
Yes, they will, but they will cost significantly more, and the net effect of that is that we have a higher return on the ships that we are buying. The eco ship marketing often compares the consumption on full speed and not necessarily with the best second-hand designs. So if you compare a very good second-hand Japanese design on slow speed, which our ships are proceeding at, the eco ship advantage is smaller. That's not to say that there is no advantage. There is an advantage, but it's not worth necessarily to pay $10 million more for such a ship. We will possibly entertain newbuilding orders in the future, but that would be in order to get our hands on more of the larger handysize vessels, you know, the 37, 38 deadweight segment, which you can't buy secondhand because there are no such secondhand ships. So we're prioritizing secondhand ships. You can work out from our earnings that we made about 10.5 a day on our handysize ships for the year, and the operating cost you can see is about 5 a day. So you do the math, you have a contribution of about $2,000 per day to the capital, and the average price we paid for the 8 ships was $15 million, right? So you have 2 on an investment of 15, and that is in the worst market since 1987. That's how strong our business model is, and that's why we're very comfortable buying ships now, because we can make a decent cash flow even in this market, and there's a lot of upside from where we are right now.
Okay, yeah, and still on secondhand ships, the Clarkson numbers, as you pointed out just now, have increased from $15.5 million for the Handysize 5-year-old to $17 million. And looking at the Clarkson website, I also see similar for 5 years. What's happening market? I mean, why are the second-hand prices rising between the end of last year and right now?
It's a bit dangerous to focus too much on the Clarkson numbers there. We don't necessarily share that view that you've seen such an increase in secondhand prices. I would personally suggest that it was very difficult to buy a 5-year-old ship for 15.5. So maybe that was a notch too low, and maybe 17 is a notch too high. So, you know, for us with our hands in this market, hands on every day, we don't necessarily agree with that with that increase.
Okay, sure. Healthy dose of skepticism there. If I'm looking at your handysize rate for this year versus the spot handysize rate published by the Baltic Exchange, it points out in your release that it's a 44% premium above the Baltic handysize published rate. If I look at the 2011 performance, that premium was just 35%. Could I understand why did that premium rise in 2012? What did you do right?
It's a little bit, whether it's 35 or 44%, we're still very happy with that outperformance. It's sometimes difficult to use a percentage as well, right? The lower the base, the higher the percentage. What you should think about is that as a rule of thumb, we will show a higher outperformance in dollars per day and also obviously in percentage in a weak market than in a strong market, right? In a strong market, anybody can find a cargo. In a weak market, it really takes skill, relationships, cargo contracts, and good people, and economies of scale, right? So we have that. So that's why you're seeing maybe higher percentage and higher outperformance in a weak market than you do in a strong market.
Okay, sure. I'll just ask one last question before I exit and allow other people to ask first. I'm looking at the Handysize and Handymax operating expenses per day, and the 2012 numbers were about 10% plus higher than they were in 2011. What's driving the increase, and do you expect similar increases this year?
Are you referring to the the operating cost, the 3.9 to 4.4?
Yes, that's
The increase that came through, if you turn back to which we have just done to slide number 15, so you can see on the own column there that the daily OPEX costs gone up around $500 per day. Notice at the interim that it had gone up about that amount as well. So these were related to factors that were taking place in the first half of 2012, and it relates principally to increased crew wages. We're also operating a higher portion of our ships in the Atlantic and mobilizing Asian-orientated crews to the Atlantic incurs higher travel costs and just general higher maintenance costs that were incurred on vessels in the first part of the year. But again, you would have seen a similar number of the OPEX at the interim results as for the full year. So you can conclude that these operating costs are at the moment stable and flat going forward.
Yes, you're right about that, Andrew, for the Handysize. For the Handymax, there was a bit of a jump in the second half versus the first half.
Yeah, we need to look at the number of days. We had one ship in 2011, and we have basically three ships. So I wouldn't suggest that that's a useful guide to the costs going forward. This year, we are taking delivery of four Handymax vessels, which will reflect the cost structure of those, the OPEX costs that we have in the Handymax. Again, we're pretty comfortable with where those are at the moment and not expecting those to show any significant increases.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Pony Chan of Macquarie. Thank you.
Hi. Yes, I just have a follow-up question on the premium you get over spot rate. So that has done very well in 2012. How much would you put that to basically contract timing, and how much would you put that into basically more efficient in terms of your vessel deployment, and should we be sort of expecting the same sort of premium into 2013?
Yeah, it's a good question. One that we can't kind of detail exactly for you, but you are absolutely correct that premium consists of a couple of different things. The biggest being our cargo portfolio and the higher utilization of our fleet that brings, right? So if you control cargo by way of a contract in one direction, you can bid very aggressively on cargoes in the other direction, and hence increase your utilization without charging more to your customer. So the index rate, as we compare with, is based on a 50-50 round trip, right? While we often achieve 70-80% laden percentage. So that is the biggest single contribution to that premium. And to achieve that premium, you got to have large scale, right? You got to have cargo contracts. You can't take a cargo contract unless you got economies of scale. You got to have a big fleet to have your ship in the right place at the right time. But the other reason, as you say, is also when you're coming off a stronger market, you obviously benefit from some contracts that are taken at a higher level, and the longer time that the market remains at a low level, your older contracts expire, and that tends to put pressure on that premium, right? Because your fixed rate is getting lower and lower. We're obviously managing that very carefully and have been a little bit careful in taking a lot of contracts recently because rates are at their lowest level. So how will that premium look going forward? Again, you have maybe two reasons that I've given you so far indicating that it will be tough for us to maintain that very high dollar per day premium. One is that older contracts are gradually running out, and two, as hopefully and we believe that the market will strengthen, it's tougher to make a high premium in a higher market. But you know, you will find, if you go back in history, that we have always produced a decent premium, but it's probably at its highest right now at the weakest point in the cycle.
Okay, and just have a follow-up question as well. You have moved some of the ships into the Atlantic Basin. Is there any, so your fleet are probably more balanced now, is there anything in the current market situation in the Atlantic Basin that will cause you to shift to back to more into the Pacific Basin area?
You know, this is a very fluid thing. So it's not that we decide to put 20 more ships in the Atlantic. You know, it's totally opportunistic depending on the cargo combinations. It's strategic as regards we have opened a couple of new offices, you know, most recently in Durban in South Africa and Stamford in Connecticut, the U.S. And these are small commercial offices, and these guys are drumming up new cargo contracts in the Atlantic more so than before. So we've increased in the Atlantic primarily because it's a strategic objective for us to become bigger there. And we do that by securing cargo contracts and having a worldwide network of cargo contracts and offices, which make us very comfortable to send our ships anywhere where they make the highest return, where we can optimize the combinations of the ships and the cargoes and the voyages.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Anson Snyder of CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Nathan at CLSA. Nice results, guys. Quick question following up quickly on Bonnie's question just now. In terms of then the deployment, what's your average goal in terms of timing in terms of the different basins? Now, obviously, you've had the build-out, and you can shift between Pacific and Atlantic at will, but it is costly, obviously, to move. So in terms of thinking about how long you could imagine leaving ships before redeploying, and do you have any time frame?
No, it doesn't really work that way, right? We would, you know, what drives this, what supports this system, which is a very, you know, well-oiled optimization system, at the base of that are cargo contracts, right? So you know, you build, you're trying to build a network of complementary cargo contracts of, you know, cement in and logs out, et cetera, into the various regions. And then you top up with a lot of spot business, and you're very opportunistic depending on where the rates are highest and how you see various things going on in the market, and you choose to ballast ships over to a certain region for various reasons. So, I mean, this is the skill of the team. This is what we do. And you kind of can't, so it's not done by we set this strategy to put 30 ships here or to have 50% of our ships in the Atlantic. We are much more opportunistic than that, but it's driven by the cargo contract that we can, that we have. We have a very solid base of cargo contracts, and that's really what drives this. Sorry, I can't give you a more kind of specific answer, but that's because there is none.
I understood. That was what I expected, but thought I'd ask anyway. In terms of the tugs and the build-out in Newcastle, do you have any idea in terms of costs, what we're expecting?
We intend to do that, at least initially, with existing assets. So we don't expect to order new tugs or buy more tugs to enter that. We're repositioning assets within our towage business, taking, for example, a couple of our tugs from the Middle East and Australianizing them, and intend to use them in Newcastle.
Great. And final question. I believe you said earlier a couple of the new vessels that you've purchased are log fitted. Was that correct?
Seven of the eight are logs fitted. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question is from Lee Low of ING Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Lee Low. Your line is open. You can ask the questions now. Okay, let's welcome the next question. And the next one is from the Gao Chao of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Hello? And let's welcome the next question. It's from Lok Wu of Clay Management. Please go ahead.
No one there either.
Okay, and the last question is Raymond Yap of CIMB.
Yes, I need to check whether you can hear me.
We can.
Okay, great. Just three more questions. You mentioned that the overall handy size demand you mentioned that the net buy growth for the handy size fleet last year grew by about 3%. That looks like a really low number. Couldn't demand have grown more than that? Because the decline in the handy size bulk rates was, the spot rates was pretty large, but 3% net supply growth seems to be very low.
Yeah, no, 3% is correct. It's due to a lot of scrapping and much fewer deliveries of handy size ships compared to the larger segments.
Yeah, so if you juxtapose that against the Chinese imports of seven minor bulks growing 7%, that would have to mean that the rest of the world is importing a lot less, such that the average is possibly less than 3%?
No, again, 3% is supply of ships from shipyards net of scrapping. Has nothing to do with demand of imports, etc. Not sure we're miscommunicating on the
demand.
Demand has been higher than supply growth. Yes, we agree with that. But we are unfortunately influenced by the larger segments, principally the Handymax segment, where the supply growth was much higher. And Handymax is in turn partly influenced by the Panamax, and Panamax is partly influenced by the Capesize. So you've had a massive growth of Capesize and Panamax and Handymax, which unfortunately spills over to also our Handysize segment. But please note that we made same, if not more, than, for example, Capesize ships last year that are five times as big. So we are doing much better than the larger ships, but we would have made even better if it wasn't for the big supply growth of the larger segments.
Okay, so the transmission mechanism, is it because, let's say, if Capesizes are really cheap, then some cargo owners might combine two Panamax cargoes and put it in a Capesize, and that's how it cascades down, the effect cascades down to the other classes. Would that be correct?
Yes, that is correct. There is less cascading or cannibalization, so to speak, between Capes and Panamaxes as opposed to Handymax and Handysize, because Handymax and Handysize have cranes and they obviously draw a lower draft, right? So our ships can get into smaller ports and up the rivers, and we have our own cranes to load and discharge, while the bigger ships rely on port facilities to load and discharge, and they are deeper, so they can only go to certain ports. But it does hang together exactly the way you described to some degree. So Handysize is primarily cannibalized by Handymax, right? So both ships have cranes, but not entirely, but to some degree. So yes, that is correct.
Okay. In terms of slow steaming, how did you implement that in 2012? Do you have a number, let's say, about how fast your ships are sailing in 2012 versus how fast they were sailing in 2011?
Yeah, we won't provide exact details about that, but we are totally on top of slow steaming and have been for many years. It's nothing new, and we are utilizing and optimizing it every day on every ship. So it goes on. It's there to stay. It's driven by the high oil price, and so long as oil prices are high and the freight market is weak to medium, it will continue to go on.
Okay, yeah, and maybe just one last question from me. In terms of the PB towage business, I believe that some of it is very much contract-driven, especially on the offshore side. Are there any major contracts that are expiring in 2013? If you wanted to maintain the earnings of PB Dowage into 2013 compared to 2012, would you have to depend on the renewal of those contracts or get any new contracts?
Yeah, you're right that part of the business is contract driven, and that's the CTO business, while a growing part is much more stable long term, and that's the harbor business, right? And the Newcastle entry is the harbor business, and we're now making decent money on the harbor side, which is important to note. But there is risk and reward on the offshore side in the project business, higher risk, higher reward. We don't provide exact details about when and which contract expires, etc. The main contract we have disclosed before is our big Gorgon contract that runs through 2013. But we do rely on renewing projects. We think we're well positioned to do that. There are a lot more projects. It is an active market. It remains an active market. A lot of new LNG projects. The next one is Wheatstone, which is the same customer as the Gorgon project, i.e. Chevron. And again, we think we're well positioned to win more business there.
Okay, sure. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question is from Pony Chen of Macquarie. Please go ahead. Let's welcome the last question, and it is from the Lord Wu of Claim Management. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Hi. just wanted to ask a final question about your overall exposure to gas in the Asia Pacific region and more generally in the rest of the world. Can you make a comment of that, please? On that.
Well, that would be in relation to our towage business. There's no other exposure to gas. So again, it's our offshore, the offshore side of our Australian towage business. Does work for the major oil companies as regards primarily construction support, i.e. they're building the reliquefaction plants for the LNG production, offshore and onshore in Australia. And we are carrying things like modules and pipes and aggregate and so on, helping the oil companies build these plants. So that's our exposure to gas, and it's been a good one because, as you can see, we're making good money on our towage business, and we have high hopes for a continuation of this business.
Okay, so I mean, if one looks into the future, I mean, it seems to be a pretty pretty exciting sector. I mean, are you projecting large growth there? Are we going to see investment in that sector? I mean, are you? What are your projections, sort of medium to long term?
I mentioned in the presentation there that we are working with potential further investment in our CETO business, but you know, investment there is not like dry cargo where there is a large tramp market, so to speak. Again, this business is very much project driven. So unless you win a project, you won't make an investment. So it's about winning tenders and being well positioned to do that. But you know, Australia has some barriers to entry. A lot of players shy away from that market due to the high regulations and safety and unions, etc. We are in that market. We have a strong position in that market. We're happy about that, and we intend to make the most of that. And I think we're well positioned to win more business. If we win more projects, there may well be further investment. And we have a very strong team there. But you know,
what's your, sorry to interrupt, what's your market share in that business?
It's kind of difficult to measure market share there. You know, again, in the harbor business, our market share in most of the ports are now up close to 50%. It's mostly two players in the harbor ports activity. Our market share in the CETO business is much smaller than that. There's more players there. But you know, in the construction support specifically, we are a significant player, and we did win the Gorgon contract for construction support, which is the biggest contract of them all. And that's via our OMSA joint venture, but we have one third.
Are you likely to expand to places like PNG or Indonesia or these kind of places which are expanding gas or what?
We would do that against the contract, right? So we would participate in interesting opportunities there, but we would only do that against a specific project contract.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's it, right? So I just want to thank everybody who's still on for your attention and for participating in this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. The conference call has been concluded. The playback of this conference will be available for 30 days, beginning at 10 o'clock p.m. today. Thank you and goodbye.